Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We have a very special guest today, Peter Kaufman, and we're going to be talking about improv, why it's relevant. A lot of you have probably either taken improv before, or you've heard about improv and thought about taking it for men's personal development, dating, communication, all that good stuff. And Peter's an improv expert. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Robbie. Good to be here.
Yeah. You founded the Red Ball Theater in Budapest, correct? Mm-hmm. You also work with the Art of Charm, who's a very large social skills coaching company in the U.S., and you were their improv specialist in Europe, mm-hmm. correct? You've worked with about over 1,000 clients all over Europe, worked with Google, Danone, some big names. Mm-hmm. University, even you said you worked with a prison, right?
Yeah, that was just a few times. It was an interesting. A prison in Hungarian.
Oh, wow.
Extra fun.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And you came to, yeah, I want to hear about that for sure. You said you came to Kiev originally because you were working at the big festival in Kiev, right? ProAct or
something? Yeah, I was invited to direct at the English theater festival here. Okay. And then I just stuck around.
When,
I love this so much.
How long ago was that?
That was February 28, 2019, so about a year and a half ago.
Okay, so you've been in Kiev since then?
More or less,
yeah. Cool. So, give us your background. How'd you get into improv and men's personal development, all that stuff?
So I think like a lot of guys listening, I was a very logical guy growing up. I actually ended up on Wall Street very young. I dropped out of Brown to go work at an arbitrage trading firm called Jane Street Capital.
Similar to my background, I started with a Wall Street firm in San Diego.
Yeah, there you go. I'm sure it's very common. And basically, I just got bored. So when I was just like an intern and when I was just getting into it, it was super exciting because it was, you know, it's like everything you grow up dreaming about. And then I got there and, you know, the work was what I thought it would be, but the life wasn't what I thought it would be. And I was bored. I was depressed, to be honest. And I didn't see a way out of it.
Were you working crazy hours too?
Actually, no. That was one of the few firms where they actually treated you well, which made it all the more clear for me that there was no excuse. It was just this wasn't the life for me. It was a gift, actually. There was no, oh, it's Morgan Stanley. I'm working 16 hours, 6 days a week. You know, it was just a good life, and I wasn't liking it.
Yeah.
So I was like, something's wrong here. And just from a chat with a friend, he was like, hey, take an improv class. It's like the opposite of what you're doing right now.
Right.
So there's got to be wisdom there. So I was like, hell yeah.
You're spending all day like looking at numbers and in the logical sort of mindset. So improv obviously gives you something to get out of that.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally different, like social circle, totally different. Part of New York, totally different everything. So I was in love. I walked in there day one. It was like April 5th or something like that. And by May 4th, I'd quit my job.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know at that point I was going to be teaching improv. That more happened organically, but I just knew as I gained confidence in myself in improv, I was like, I just have to leave and I'll figure it out. Like, I just trusted myself. I'll figure it out if I start, and I know I want to start.
So you just started taking classes, and then within a month, you're like, I want to do something in this more creative sort of space.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I was going to go, I had a job lined up at the Department of Transportation. Mm-hmm. I was going to go be like an urban planner and build the Second Avenue subway. But that quickly turned out to be, I was just looking for anything but my job. So, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just, I quit my job. I biked to Coney Island. I looked at the ocean and I was like, I want to be on the other side of the ocean somewhere. And that's when I basically, my lease wasn't up yet, so I was paying a lot of money. I couldn't break the lease. Mm-hmm. So I stuck around in New York for about 5 months after that, and I just took improv classes. I hung out at the UCB, at the Magnet Theater. All my friends became improv people. I stopped hanging out with logical people, and it just very quickly changed the way I view the world, and it was just very natural when my lease was up to put on a backpack and get back to Europe.
Right. Careful, this shakes it a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Yes.
And so you have you're part Hungarian, is that right?
Yeah, my grandfather's Hungarian. Mm-hmm. So my first adventure in Europe was in Budapest, and I actually got a citizenship after 6 months there. And so yeah, I'm a Hungarian American.
Got it. Okay. So you were you could, sounds like a bit similar to me. You're kind of sick of the U.S., sick of the rat race over there, and you're like, fuck it, I'll move to Europe. Is that sort of mentality?
Or yeah, like to the T. I left on 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. I haven't been back. I've just been in Europe, and yeah, I think we made the right choice given what's happening right now.
Yeah,
would not want to be there.
I do not miss America right now. But yeah, tell us more about like your journey. Mm-hmm. You know, so you started getting into improv. How did it affect your life? How did it, you know, kind of change your mindset, personality, all that stuff?
Mm-hmm. So as I said already, the number one thing it did is I learned the really important lesson of just start. Mm-hmm. Right. There's a great improv sort of truism that if you don't know what to do, just get on stage and trust me, you'll know what to do. Okay. Like as soon as you put the pressure on you, as soon as you enter and the eyes are on you, you'll do something, right? You'll figure it out. And we also, like, there's this idea of your foot is often smarter than your body. Hmm. So if your foot, like, if your foot starts to move towards the stage, you know on a deep level that you have something you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to start to trust that foot and just put, you know, your first foot moves, put the second foot in, put the third foot in. Before you know it, you're on the stage and your idea is manifesting itself in real time, with real-time feedback, with appreciation, with applause, with laughter, sometimes with sadness. You know, mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a sad idea. But it's a habit of trusting yourself, trusting your intuition. Also, even like connecting to your deeper intuition. Like a lot of people don't even know when they have a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But their body does. And you can actually see it all.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just building that habit of trusting myself, taking action. And that's how I left my job. That's how I got to Europe. It's how I started teaching eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I built my life.
Yeah, this is such a great metaphor for life because, you know, often we wait for the perfect opportunity or we wait until we're ready or, you know, something, whatever excuse it is, but usually it's just a fucking excuse.
Yep, the male hamster, right?
Yep. It's so similar to something as simple as approaching women. You see a beautiful woman and you sit there in your head and think about, yeah. Oh, what am I going to say? What should I do? She's gone. Versus if you just move your one foot and start walking towards her, usually something, doesn't matter what, is going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys think they need to say the perfect thing, whatever. You can just walk up, you know, like if you don't do it for sure, you know, exactly. She's gone. But just like you get up on the stage, something's going to happen and you're never going to be, you're never going to kick yourself for getting up there.
Exactly.
Even if you bomb, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and you know, I was laughing because I just have a memory of one time I did that. And like, you know how I said, like, you always come up with something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I went up to her and I was like, like it literally came out as gibberish. And she just started cracking up and like, we actually connected. So, and I actually believe in that. It's like sometimes you don't know how to express yourself and the only thing you know how to do is blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like a baby step. And then the next time you do it, the blah, blah, blah becomes high. And then it becomes some kind of smooth line eventually. But you have to start somewhere, even if it's just blah.
Right.
And sometimes that's the right thing to do. And that's that's the deeper thing about improv I became interested in is sort of improv as trusting your body. And, mm-hmm. and really getting in touch with that deeper level, which is what I became interested in about 3 years ago, which totally changed everything. But we can get into that later.
Yeah, well, real quick before we do, I think there could be a bit of maybe a negative stigma about improv or just like the idea I had about it before I started doing it. And I started doing it way back in like 2001 or 2002. Right when I got into, maybe 2003, whatever, right when I got into like, you know, improving myself in terms mm-hmm. of dating, because everyone said, take an improv class. So I signed up for an improv mm-hmm. class. I was living in San Diego and was taught by this like 65-year-old woman.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the people in the class were around her age. Mm-hmm. And there was me and like two of my wingmen So like, hey ladies.
Yeah, these like three like early 20-year-old guys with, you know, 20 or so, it was a big class, like maybe 15 to 25 other, like mostly, you know, middle-aged, you know, kind of weirdos. Because the stigma is like improv tends to attract weirdos. So yeah. A lot of the exercises we were doing, we were like, is this really like going to help us, you know, meet women or improve our social skills?
But did it?
Yeah, sort of, kind of, not really, I don't know. And then I didn't stop there. I took some more classes after that, and they were a lot better because the teacher was, you know, more age relevant, and a lot of the improv games and exercises were way more relevant. But like, how do you find a good improv coach or a good improv teacher or a good class?
Good question.
What do you look for? What do you
With any kind of personal development, the energy flows down from the top. So it's like, you got to look at, you know, every coach is a lighthouse, and you got to look at what they're attracting. So it's not necessarily the case. Like, one of my best trainers was a Israeli woman who was actually a former drill sergeant. And she was my she was one of my favorite improv coaches. So it's not that you have to look for someone who's like you. Yes, I mean, it can't help to have a guy who's been through it, because they can give you specific advice for your things. But if you're just taking an improv class to learn improv, you want to look at, like, just, you can get a vibe from the person. And it's like, you want a vibe of, number one, not to get controversial in my first podcast interview, but don't go for people if you get a major safe space vibe. Because
you're
improv
politically
is
correct.
Yeah,
too,
if
like
there's
touchy feely. Yeah.
Look, you got to just say it as it is. A lot of improv teachers are very politically correct, just by nature. I mean, it's an emotional art. It's an artistic art. You know, art in general is very, right now in the West, safe space, you know, social justice type stuff. And pretty much every coach, you know, except for myself, will have that bent in them. But that doesn't mean you got to look at the person and see, are they reasonable, right? Because improv is not a safe space. It's by nature dangerous. If you're worried about getting into problematic things, you're not going to learn. So you got to look for someone who you feel can hold the space. So I don't know if that helps, but someone who can hold a little bit of discomfort in them.
Yeah, no, it does. Like, because I mean, the immediate vibe I got from the woman I worked with was like, you know, she's just kind of like a goofy older, you know, like I'd be worried to like say fart around her. Maybe, what about, so I've been running an improv class, not personally, I have a volunteer that's in my monthly leverage program.
Yeah.
And we do an improv class every Tuesday on Zoom. And I have no idea, like, his qualification. Like, he said he's done some improv before and so on and so. But the classes are cool. You talk, you do a lot of listening exercises. It's very good for conversation skills that I wasn't really expecting that. Because when I took it, it was okay for conversation skills, but it was more just kind of like this fun, silly way to get out of your head. But, you know, what are the benefits of improv? Like, who should take improv? I mean, obviously it seems like everyone could benefit, but any sort of specific people that should do it if they're struggling with XYZ?
Yeah, I mean, I still say everyone, but I think a better question is like, what specifics do you take out of it?
Okay.
For your life?
Yeah.
And actually, while we were setting up, I wrote some of them down to be sure I got them all. So yeah, number one is going to be just, okay, if you're the kind of guy listening who is coming from more of a seduction world, which is safe to say some amount of people, right? The number one thing you're going to get is calibration. Because if you're on the street or in the nightclub, and you have so much extra factors coming at you, right? And you lose the person in front of you, right? And worse, you sort of see it as a game, and it's not a game. This is my personal thing. You know, I've met my fair share of people in the seduction world. but I don't view it as a game because that's you take away the person in front of you. And what improv is going to do is it's going to teach you. Yeah, it's going to teach you how to interact with this person in a powerful way, in a present way, and therefore in an attractive way. But you're going to be connecting with the person in front of you rather than connecting with your own fear of the situation. Hmm. And you can do it in a safe environment, not a safe space, but in a closed, safe environment where you're gonna have, you can have people helping you establish the connection, because improv is not a game. It's a celebration of connection. And you're gonna learn how to look at the person and feel what's there and act on it. And that's what's gonna get you what you want in life, whether it's networking or girls. It's about understanding the true nature of what's in the air between you. And a good improv coach will walk you through how to calm yourself down until you're interacting with the person and not your anxiety. Mm-hmm. And that's a gift that it's very hard to get in a seduction environment, because you're thinking about winning. Let's be honest. Me too.
Yeah, right? Of course.
I find myself tripping up into that too. So it's an environment that embraces authenticity, mm-hmm. not the game. And that's the key to your life happiness, is the authentic relationship after the game.
Right.
Right. So that's the key thing. It's there's a great exercise where you it's basically called sit to authenticity, mm-hmm. where you basically just like sit in chairs and you're not allowed to say anything mm-hmm. until something comes out of you. Hmm. And it takes about a minute before yep. something actually comes. And it forces you to calm down and see what's there. And that's a muscle. And the more you build it, the more it becomes natural in real life.
Yeah. I mean, that's so important, because most of the time, guys will be, or not just guys, but people in general, especially guys in front of a beautiful girl, there's fear. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like the the barrier to connection. Mm-hmm. And you were telling me earlier about a little bit controversial exercise you did where you had the guy on the stage and you're asking what he was feeling or something. Can you tell that story?
It's not so controversial as much as it is active coaching, right? Like a lot of improv coaches are like, no, just do whatever you want. And I took, I work with a lot of guys. Again, it's like, we're all lighthouses. So, you know, I had Red Ball Theater. It was a big smiling, cheeky guy. You know, I got a lot of guys coming to me in Budapest, especially mm-hmm. when it got out in the forums. I didn't even know anything about seduction until they found me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I can teach this. Why not?
Yeah.
So what I started doing is I just noticed in every one of my classes, it was about 50-50 men and women. And of the women, there would be one just like girl everyone wanted. Like just one like super fun, open, cute girl. Mm-hmm. And all the guys were uncomfortable in scenes with her. Mm-hmm. Because there's that extra bit of awareness of I want this thing in front of me, right? Mm-hmm. And there's just a little bit, because it's all inside of every guy, is that dominant wolf, like I want to eat this thing, right?
Yeah.
And so it becomes part of their system when they're in front of this woman. So I just noticed that, and I just had like, you know, session 4 of every class. So I did 8-week programs, mm-hmm. which is pretty standard across improv, 6 or 8 weeks. 8 weeks is better. So I did 8 weeks. And session 4 was authentic connection week. So session 1 was just calm down the jitters, have fun. Session 2 was start to learn how to build. Session 3 was a little deeper. Session 4 was different. It was about building the team and breaking down some of these like leftover anxieties. So I got really good at like team building through this. Mm-hmm. And what I would do is I would just put everyone on stage and be like, you know, like, what do you want to do right now? And you see the foot move, right? Especially, mm-hmm. you know, with the guy and the cute girl, right?
What do you mean exactly by team building? Just like building an organization or a team within an organization, or?
I would say each of my groups became a bit of a social circle, like a tribe.
Okay.
And there's sort of a method to that. It's like.
And you would keep those people in the same group throughout the course?
Yeah. So you signed up for, there was a trial class and then there was an 8-week course. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then pretty much 95% of the people that completed course 1 moved on to course 2 together. So that, I mean, they became really close. And mm-hmm. I mean, actually a lot of them founded their own comedy communities, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of, you know, it created motion.
Right.
But the point about the team building is like, you have to start to see like what's there. You have to get people trust walks. You have to get people trusting each other on a deeper level.
Excuse me.
So one of the things we did was you get them on stage and you do one of these sit to silent exercises and you'd be like, okay, what do you want to do? And I'd see the foot move towards her, right? Mm-hmm. But then they'd be like, no. So what's happening on a coaching level is you're seeing the mask someone puts on when they're afraid of desire, right? So I desire this thing and then I want this, but there's eyes on me I'm uncomfortable with, whether it's my own eyes or Peter's eyes or her eyes, whatever it is making me uncomfortable with my authentic desire. I have a predictable pattern I do to mask it. Mm-hmm. And it is a mask and it's physical, right? The foot will go forward and their body will turn away. Mm. Their foot will go forward and their hands will come up. Mm-hmm. Their foot will go forward and their head will move away, right? And it's predictable to the person. Mm-hmm. It's your mask, right? And then you start to work with it and you say, like, I noticed your foot's moving forward. Do you want to go closer to her? Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah. So do it. Mm-hmm. And then you slowly start to see the anxiety fill and the anxiety release. And then what's left is usually not a sexual scene. It's a beautiful scene of like closeness and intimacy and all these things we're all afraid of, right? So this is kind of how I operated. And then
so you saw him, you know, hesitate essentially, and you said no, like go for it. Which I guess that could get embarrassing or awkward, right? Potentially, depending on how they felt and how you coached them. That's kind of what I heard from the story. I was like, wow, that could be very transformational and very kind of, I don't know, what's the word? Like, it could go really good or really bad, mm-hmm. in a way.
I can't think of a time it went bad.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Like, would you tell him to say what you're, you know, what are you thinking about her or how?
No, it was just on a physical, like, level.
Oh, I see. It was just like move. You seem like you want to move towards her, so.
Yeah, it seems like you want to go in that direction. And I would never make it about like tell her how you.
That's what, well,
what the fuck? No, I'm not saying like,
how did that go?
It's not a sexual energy exercise. I actually did one of those, but that's more for the girls, ironically. I'll tell you about that in a second.
Yeah.
Actually, I know. I also have a good one for male sexual energy called Perfect Porno, which I can tell you. You could actually do it with a friend. Mm-hmm. It's a good exercise. But yeah, this one was it never became awkward,
okay,
especially because it happened for, it's like halfway into the course.
I misunderstood. I thought it was like, tell her what you want to do to her. So.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
It's like a nice improv class turn. This got interesting.
No. You want me to talk about the guys?
Yeah,
so I had,
Well, first of all, I can see how that's very powerful in terms of helping guys get past their anxiety and their fear, and how that could affect all of their conversations and all their social interactions.
Yeah, you're really working on an aura level. I'm a spiritual guy, so I think it's like you're actually changing the guy's aura. But
yeah, I agree.
You can leave that.
I agree completely.
Yeah.
So you were saying about, well, I was going to ask you about the porno, pro porno or whatever that was.
Perfect porno.
The perfect porno. And then before that, you were about to say something about the guys.
Yeah, they kind of go together. Uh-huh. So as I said, when I started, I was just doing improv. Mm-hmm. You know, I was aware of the seduction community, but I was never actively involved with it until one guy took my course and then put it on some form. I think it was RSD at the time. Mm-hmm. And then my next class was all RSD guys.
He put it. Oh, he mentioned he was.
Yeah, he just said, "Hey, if you're in Budapest, there's this great guy teaching a good thing." Uh-huh. And then like that's how I met Danny, who, you know,
right,
is how we know each. Well, one of the ways we know each other. Mm-hmm. Former student of mine. So then like that whole half that group was like RSD guys, and it was like eight guys and one girl, Claudia, who I love dearly, who put up with us. she just kind of understood, like, yeah, she's the chick in the group of guys, but she went with it. It wasn't awkward at all. If you're listening, big respect for that.
Good work, Claudia.
So that was like my first experience working with guys and realizing like I can more actively push on these things because mm-hmm. that's what people really want.
Yeah.
And then later on, that kind of led to me working with Art of Charm, which is, was explicitly about male development mm-hmm. And conversation skills and charisma. And the one I love doing with guys, exercise I call Perfect Story. And it's really simple. It's like, you know, I'm going to tell you your perfect story now. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to just give you a plot element, like, you know, your base jumping off a volcano.
Okay.
Right. And then you just tell me yes or no. Okay. Like, yes, that's my perfect story, or no, try something else.
Yeah, try something else.
Yeah. You're in outer space on Mars.
Sure.
Yeah. So now here we go. So the sure, right?
Right.
So for this one, especially with the beginning guys, I say there is no sure.
There's yes, yes or no.
Or no.
Okay.
Right. So you start to train the conversation skills.
Yeah.
And you start to train boundaries.
Ah, very right? cool.
It's yeah. like, yeah, so everything.
And I'm thinking yeah. like, oh, I should just tell them it sounds good enough, but for the sake of whatever. Not to be like
not to be a dick.
Disagreeable apple.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Yeah, go yeah. in the darts. But no,
it's not my perfect story. It's perfect or it's not perfect.
Great.
There is no middle ground. Right?
Okay, so no.
Yeah. So like perfect story is not. It's a Keith Johnstone exercise. You know, mm-hmm. it's not mine by any means. I've invented one improv exercise.
Right.
But what I did was I sort of.
So wait, that's the exercise. Is the yes or no part? Or then you tell the story.
It's both. So there's partner A and partner B. Uh-huh. So A tells the story, B sets the boundary of like, this is what I want or this is what I don't want. And then you switch. So you get both sides of it. And both are equally important.
Oh, so you're just offering stories and I'm just saying no until my perfect one
comes. Yeah, exactly. So
but obviously the exercise is when someone says sure.
That's no. It's just training because everyone says sure at some point.
That's
and
I'm
like, yeah, boom, learning moment.
That's a teaching
one.
Point.
Exactly. Yeah. So and what I noticed with the guys is eventually it becomes so you're sitting on a beach with two beautiful models. Mm-hmm. And then like we get to yeses. So what I started doing with guys for sexual energy was okay, perfect porno. Mm-hmm. It's perfect story, but you know, go get in touch with your sexual energy, like design your perfect porno together. Mm-hmm. And it's hilarious, man. And you get like these really shy guys, and by the end, they're talking about like, you know, tits and ass and stuff like that. And it's hilarious. It's one of my favorite things.
Two girls, one cup.
Yeah. Invented, like shitting on each other.
Improv class. Yeah. That's how they came up with it.
but this is I just do with the guys when I get with it to mm-hmm. kind of loosen up the energy.
Okay, I was wondering what the perfect part. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so just to put the period on it is I didn't invent these things, but I started to modify them for the needs of these guys that started coming to me. And a lot of it's really effective.
Yeah, I can imagine. So what's kind of the progression? So guys come into improv and they start to strip away the masks that they're mm-hmm. wearing. It's really, I always talk about masks mm-hmm. because we all have different masks that we wear. A big one that I see in the industry I'm in is like the nice guy mask.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the number one thing I see is, you know, guys hide behind this inauthentic mask of a nice guy because they decided at a young age that, oh, if I, you know, act really nice and do things and do favors, I'll be rewarded with sex and love and all those things. So do you see that a lot play out? What other sort of masks do you see if you can?
Yeah, I was thinking about that on my run this morning and I was like, I have no answer. No, I have somewhat of an answer. So it's like, what do people, there's a mean mask
mm-hmm.
that was me personally. I mask my needs with, or my desire with cruelty quite often actually.
Interesting.
And I see that a fair bit, a shocking bit of time.
Like when you felt you didn't have the tools to get what you wanted, you would go into cruelty a bit, or you'd act mean?
Yeah, or my interpretation of the game I learned was be cruel. Not be challenging, but be cruel.
Okay.
And that's how I internalized it often. And, mm-hmm. and I'm not, I saw that, there's at least one specific example, and I'm still like, you know, that's deep stuff. And that's also when, like, you know, if you, improv is not therapy, and there's some things you really need. When you're working with mask work and musculature in your face, so it gets into bioenergetics, psychosomatic work, and you're like, you know, where's the line?
Right, and you see that too. Like I had one client in particular who was an older guy, and whenever a girl came around, he'd his face would transform into like,
Yeah.
And how's it going? I'm like, why are you talking like that, man? Like, that's not your fucking voice when you talk to me. Why are you talking like that to her? And I'm like, it's a mask, you know? And it's...
That's a strong mask.
It took a lot of years, about 2 years of intense, work with models when I had him just standing face to face. And breaking that down.
Yeah. That's intense. But you start to, I don't mean to pry, but like,
no, sure.
Did he cry at some point?
Oh yeah, all sorts of shit came out. Crying, hysterical laughter, like the whole range of human emotions came out. Because he was essentially like, if this is our range of emotions, he was like right there all the time.
Yeah.
So it can be very therapeutic. All of this work, of course. So
I'm just thinking it's like I'm on a break from teaching improv right now because I kind of see myself, I need to be an actual therapist and then come back and do it, because the more I look into it, the more I'm like, if I want to do it the way I want to do it, which is this way, you know, you got to have a little more training at some point, like especially with mask work, it's like there's a whole field about this. But yeah, that, I mean, the face-to-face, there's actually an acting exercise from Meisner work where you start to strip away your interpretation of the world and get down to what is. So you stand face-to-face and, you know, this is me and this is you, you know, and you're like, what's the truth here? You're only allowed two things. You can say what I see or what I sense, so what I smell, what I see, what I hear, or you can say what I feel. So like, you know, the fourth is looking at you, I see your head tilt back right slightly. You know, I can't say looking at you, you look nervous. That's my interpretation, right?
Gotcha.
So you're stripping away interpretation, so you just see what is and what I feel. Right. So looking at you, I feel calm. Looking at you, I feel nervous. And you just start to admit that to the air, right? And then that can be a very powerful exercise. And it's sort of like when you learn to dance, it's really powerful because you see a lot of different styles, right? And you're like, oh, like all girls are different, that, you know, because they dance different, they have different needs, they have different following styles, right? And the same thing, you kind of do this exercise and you have like 10 different partners in like an hour. And you're like, oh, like everyone impacts me different ways. Everyone reacts to my honesty in different ways, my vulnerability in different ways. And it's, and you start to kind of, again, to get back to this idea of the authentic connection.
Right.
What is the authentic connection between us? Is there an authentic connection between us, or do I just want to fuck you for my ego?
Right.
Right. And then how do I work with that? Right. You know, if I sense this, what do I actually want here? What, you know, what do you actually want?
So, yeah, it's a really powerful exercise. Yeah. I mean, that's probably, I remember when I first started doing these sort of exercises somewhere in, most of them were in like personal development classes, or trainings, workshops, that sort of thing. You know, I realized I spent most of my life, almost all of my life, like hiding, because, you know, I grew up in a family where we didn't really talk about that shit. You know, it'd be weird to say how you feel most of the time, right? Like, not allowed to yell and scream, can't cuss, can't, you know. So
any emotion is wrong somehow.
It's like happy emotions were great, but like bad emotions, like, don't be an asshole, keep those to yourself. Sort of thing.
Did your family, when did they move to America?
Like early 1900s.
Okay, so before. Yeah, I mean, we talked about this. Like, I have a very similar family, but we're
a couple Ashkenazi Jews.
Couple of Jews in rich cities in America. In men's personal development.
I haven't seen those guys around.
Not the first Kaufman on this podcast.
Yeah, so that's, you know, as with anything, of course, like the further you go down the rabbit hole, all of these, I don't know, sort of trainings, teachings, they kind of lead you back to authenticity, awareness, a lot of the time, like spirituality, you know.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting to see all the different inroads and how they all kind of lead to the same place, which is, consciousness, awareness, authenticity, you know, and some people start like, you know, with really inauthentic shit, and I guess this is the nature of the beast. Yeah, so you said
totally agree.
you're not coaching improv now. And I know you're working on some accent development stuff with locals here. Tell us more about some of the accent work, because that's also a very important thing in men's development, especially for some guys that are, unlucky enough to, if you grow up in India, you end up with an Indian English accent a lot of the time, or an Asian English accent. And if you're into European or, American girls, Canadian girls, Western girls, the unfortunate stereotype is someone with that accent is unattractive. Mm-hmm. I had a client who was like, he looked like Indian James Bond.
Really?
And every girl they'd see him, they'd be like, wow, that guy's so hot. And then he'd start talking in like a horrible, like high-pitched Indian accent. I'm bad at doing it. But and then immediate, like all attraction was fucking dead. So that can be incredibly important to reduce accent. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, but it's also, it is a little bit, I just took what I knew from improv and I applied it to a business. Mm-hmm. Like, because improv's not a business, it turns out. It's a, it's an art. So, but I just took everything we're talking about with the mask, I took it and I applied it to the US accent, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, in Russia, you never talk with your jaw. Mm-hmm. Russia is talk with back of mouth and then it just flows out. With American, your jaw is always working, always. Mm-hmm. So number one is when I talk with Ukrainians, you have to start to work your jaw. And that's physical, man. It's like you have to treat it like yoga and like actually massage your jaw and get rid of that, or really put on a mask. You have to start to be an actor. And like your jaw, a lot of it, you can release it back here and back here. Like, and you start working with the tension in your head. So it's not that I've left improv, it's that I'm sort of morphing it and then I'll come back to it when it makes sense. Because it's like, I want to work with muscular armor, right? I want to work with a mask. Mm-hmm. So this is like my first way, and then I'll get more training and then I'll kind of bring it back to like a full program at some point. But right now I'm basically working with the mask you put on with your accent. And yeah, I can tell you, number one is for any confident accent's going to be jaw heavy, because mm-hmm. you're going to force the sound out with your mouth. Mm-hmm. If you talk in back of mouth, it's never quite so strong. It can be more romantic. It can be more like French. Oh, la, la. But mm-hmm. For English, you really want to work in your jaw. And I can go in. You can go look at my website if you want to take the course, but.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the bottom. Man, that's been lots of interesting shit. Some of those stories. Anything else that you think is relevant in terms of, improv, personal development, what guys can get out of it, or, if you're thinking about doing it, where guys can, potentially ask you if they have questions or work with you?
Yeah, if you can put something of my, we'll have something on a link somewhere, right? I do consultations, right? We can work with Perfect Story. We can work with the noticing exercise, which can be very powerful. So I do like one-on-one, or if you want to just ask me, like, do you know a good teacher in London? Like, mm-hmm. Yes, I do know a good teacher in London, if you're looking for that. If you're in this thing, it's important to have a coach who's not in the business, because everyone in like the men's business, they're 20% extra because it's their business, mm-hmm. right? So it's good to kind of triangulate. So like for me, my coaches, I've got coaches along the lines of this, but then I have just a coach like from Holland who's just a coach, mm-hmm. and he doesn't give a shit about this. He's just separate, right? And that helps ground me. So improv can be that for a lot of guys, to just have something separate, like a separate source of their development.
What do you mean by that exactly? I'm a little confused. Like a coach who's not in the game, or a coach who's not in the business.
Like, like men's coaches, we call ourselves coaches, but there actually is like an industry called coaching, mm-hmm. and it's completely different. Like mm-hmm. the way they go about it is completely different. Mm-hmm. So that's when I don't understand it enough to say anything. I just know that when I talk to this guy, I shut up and I just listen.
What's his job description? He's just a coach.
He's a coach.
Like a life coach, or?
Yeah, you could call it a life coach. Okay. But it means something to be a coach. And it's like, they're like, just, they're just reflecting what they see, right? They're just reflecting, right? And they're helping you get to the core of you, but they're not contributing anything. They're not like suggesting anything. They're not saying, go talk to her. They're just reflecting what they see.
Like a mirror.
Exactly. And that's a skill, because we're always projecting our ego onto other people. So, so yeah, I like to triangulate my own work. And I think improv can be that for a lot of people, because it is important to get some of the safe space stuff. It's like, if you hate the left and you're like, I want to be in this world because I hate the left, well, you're missing something, because there's something to be said there. And improv can be a good way to keep in touch with that part of the world in a way that's actually helping you meet your goals.
Yeah. Well, anything else we should touch on?
I don't know. What do you think?
That's a pretty good time, wasn't it? So.
Ooh. Yeah, if we stick around, we might actually solve the meaning of life.
Yeah, right?
See what, well, what I wrote down.
I think we're pretty good on time.
Yeah.
So, what was it, two?
Yeah. I can give another, we can like demonstrate an exercise maybe.
Yeah. So how about we try to demonstrate, one of your favorite exercises.
Yeah. So there's it's a classic exercise called It's Tuesday And.
Okay.
And it's a simple yes and exercise. Like if you know anything about improv, you know, there's this idea of yes and. So basically it's, I'm going to say what Robbie is doing. Mm-hmm. And then Robbie's going to say what I am doing, and hopefully we create a story together.
Okay.
Now the trick is to keep it active and present. Okay. So like, we can make, you're combing your hair.
Right? And you're picking your nose.
Yeah. And you are laughing at me.
And you're thinking I'm laughing at you, but I'm really laughing at the dog.
Okay, so now we can pause. So now you're justifying, right?
Okay.
So now, and that's in your head, right? So you wanna, thinking isn't an action, right? Uh-huh. You can tell me, like my face is getting red, or you can tell me, but this exercise is about staying in the active moment.
Got it. So that when I said but, that's
yeah, you start to go into butt mode, right. You start to go into justify.
I realized that because I know the yes and, I was like, fuck it, that butt. He's going to call it out.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So this is going to help you stay present in the active moment, right?
Okay.
And not work, because otherwise you're just worrying about what you look like.
Got it.
Right? You're justifying. You're not, I'm not an asshole, it's the dog.
Right.
Good buddy. All right. So you are running on the river.
And you're fishing.
Mm-hmm. And you spit into the river.
And you catch a ginormous salmon.
Mm-hmm. And you say, good job, man.
And I say, thanks. I deserved it.
And you say, no.
And you give me a high five.
Mm-hmm. And you start to say, whoopee.
And you start to say, yoo-hoo.
Mm-hmm. And you, you look into my eyes. Mm-hmm.
And you see a dog walk by.
Mm-hmm. And you grab the dog and give it to me.
And you take the dog and you throw him in the air a couple times.
Mm-hmm. And you high five the dog while he's in the air.
And you almost get hit by the dog when it comes down.
Okay, that's what happens to me. What do I do?
Oh, and you duck because the dog.
Exactly. Yeah, I duck. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you push me out of the way.
And you catch the dog miraculously with one hand.
And we all live happily ever after, right? So it's really, I mean, Robbie's really good. He's Robbie, right? But you'd be amazed how hard it is to stay in the moment.
It was hard.
Yeah. It was difficult. How hard it is to not say I.
Mm-hmm.
How hard it is to not justify, like, I'm not an asshole. And it's something you'll probably do, like, day one of improv. And it can be very powerful just to catch, again, it's like all your limiting beliefs coming up. It's your avoidance of the moment, basically. You know? So.
Yeah, it was tough. Very hard to stay in the moment.
Yeah. And we got video. We can go back and watch the mask for both of us, right? Mm-hmm. We can go, I think Robbie had some wrinkles on his face during that exercise. And you can go back and you can say, hey, what if you didn't raise your forehead for this exercise? What would happen?
Yeah.
Right? What might change? Mm-hmm. And then you can start to.
Yeah, I'm sure video feedback is very powerful. I used to have I was working with a guy who had us do tons of different exercises. It wasn't an improv guy. It was more of like, I mentioned him to you earlier, more of like a school of authenticity is as odd as that is, but he would videotape us doing various things.
Yeah.
We'd watch the video and he'd be like, look at that mask. Look at this. Look at that. It was very eye opening.
Yeah. And you can also do it as a solo. You can do like self-talk. You can just put yourself on video, like talking, and then you can just play the video back and be like, what do you see?
Yeah.
And it's all going to be judgment.
A lot of people are so scared to make YouTube videos or public speak or anything just because, and watching yourself or listening to yourself, it took me a long time to just get comfortable listening to my voice or watching, you know, myself while I edited a video to remove all the judgment. Oh, you look like this. You look fat. You look stupid. You look like an idiot. You sound stupid. Like there's so much judgment at first. And, you know, of course it never, I don't think it's fully gone away, but it becomes, it's not really there so much.
You know? But it's also, it's about like, when you start to do something, like put yourself out on the internet, there's so much chaos. Like your awareness expands, right? To now like the whole world is watching me.
Yeah.
And it's unavoidable. Like your third eye opens and it's like, oh my God, there's so much more I don't understand. There's marketing, there's SEO, there's editing, there's filters, there's this ring, you know, this lighting and like the things you have to learn, it's chaos, right? And you as a man, as anyone, but particularly as a man, you have to find structure in that.
Yeah.
And that structure is just by doing. And all the judgments in your head, right? They're just protecting you, right?
Yeah.
And then like, you can write them down and be like, yeah, in a year, I want to not smile like that. I want to have better lighting. I want to have that. But right now in the moment, you just need to be doing and improving. And to bring it back to improv, improv is creating chaos and finding order on the fly.
This is a really strong, powerful metaphor. Because it's exactly, that's business.
Yeah.
You know?
It's life. Yeah. It's the girl. It's any relationship that matters to you. Mm-hmm. Is you go into the chaos and you find order. And improv is the teaching, is the process of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's no better thing for, besides computer programming and maybe playing poker, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no activity which doesn't need that.
Right.
That's true.
Well, dude, it's been awesome having you.
Yeah,
great
pleasure.
Combo. Thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So guys, make sure you check out Peter and the links and talk to you guys soon.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.